Welcome to our latest deep dive. Today we've been digging into sources on character development, and we found something, well, revolutionary. It's a framework that moves way beyond just modifying behavior, and it really zeroes in on a challenge for you, the learner. Think about it, whether you're a parent or even just trying to change a habit yourself, you almost always know what you should be doing. But that execution part, that's where we all seem to fail.
That is the absolute core of it. We are so often trapped in this loop where the goal, the expectation is perfectly clear, but the how, you know, the actual strategy to get there, it's just missing. So our mission today is to distill this one principle from the sources. You have to teach the how. When you give someone that practical internal strategy, you're not just demanding obedience, you're giving them hope.
And I think that's the real hook. Why does just focusing on be respectful, get your homework done, why does that fail so often?
Because you're identifying the target, but you haven't given them the map. You haven't provided the internal language they need for that exact moment when their impulse is telling them to do the complete opposite.
Okay, so let's talk about that, this what's trap.
Well, it's easy to fall into because it's the simplest path for the person in charge. You know, you use rewards, you use punishment, timeouts.
The charts on the fridge.
Exactly, all tracking the what. The problem is, the child, or even an adult, they keep failing. And it's not because they're defiant, not really. It's because they genuinely don't have a strategy. They know they need a good attitude, but they have no plan for how to summon one when they're frustrated.
That feels a little abstract. Let's ground this in a real scenario. The sources had some really good ones.
Yeah, they did.
Like the classic interruption. A kid is deep into a computer game, total focus.
Yeah.
You walk in and say, hey, time to set the table, and the bad attitude, it's immediate.
Of course it is.
They know the rule is be helpful. Mm. But in that specific moment, how do they actually shift their brain from that intense focus to, you know, cooperative service? What's the practical step?
That's a perfect example. You're demanding a huge internal gear shift without handing them the clutch. It's the same with sibling rivalry.
Oh, yeah.
A son knows he needs to be nice to his sister, but she just did something that was, you know, genuinely annoying. He knows the word kindness. But what does he do? What's the physical or mental action that overrides that feeling of irritation? Without a plan, the impulse just wins.
This is where the sources brought in a physical analogy that I thought was brilliant. They talked about gravity.
Yes, gravity is our default. It's the natural pull towards the easy thing. Anger, laziness, being messy, self-focused, it just pulls you down.
So to go up, to defy that pull.
You need a force greater than gravity. Mm. And that force has to be applied in the opposite direction. That force is your plan, your strategy.
And the sources pointed out this amazing little physics fact that if you ignore air resistance, a marble and a bowling ball fall at the exact same rate.
Which is so important. It tells us that this default pull, it affects everyone. It doesn't matter how smart you are, how strong-willed you think you are, gravity pulls on all of us equally.
So if you want to change direction, if you want to overcome that natural tendency,
a greater deliberate force is required. That's why just knowing the what's is useless. It's like standing at the bottom of a cliff and just wishing you were at the top. It doesn't work. Only a practical internal plan can generate that upward force.
So to make this really concrete, the sources give us this great story about a student named Ralph. He had a problem with impulsivity.
Right, talking out of turn.
And the initial strategy his teacher used was, well, it was the classic what trap.
It really was. She was putting tally marks on his desk every time he messed up. They started this at the beginning of the school year, and when the intervention we're talking about began, it was April.
Months of this, just tracking the failure.
Exactly. And all those tally marks did was remind Ralph that he was failing. It breeds discouragement, not a solution.
So they weren't teaching him how to stop, just shaming him for not stopping. What did they do to change it?
The change was all about strategy. They stopped tracking the failure and started with observation. They helped Ralph figure out the exact moments, the triggers, that caused him to talk out of turn.
So not just the general behavior.
No, the specifics. He realized it happened in two main situations. When other kids finished their work after him, and during transitions between activities. Just identifying that was the beginning of the how.
That's huge, because now it's not some random impulse, it's predictable. So once he knew when it would happen, what tool did they give him?
They worked with him to create his own internal dialogue. Basically, the words he would choose to say inside his own head at that exact moment.
A pre-planned thought.
For the first trigger, when kids finished after him, he chose the phrase, "I'm going to wait quietly." Simple.
And for the other one? The transitions.
His internal strategy was, I'm going to switch quietly.
And the sources really stressed connecting this action to a bigger motivation, a why.
Absolutely. The why is the fuel for the how. They asked him what kind of person he wanted to be, and Ralph said he wanted to be known as a thoughtful person. So the silent waiting wasn't just about obedience.
It was about becoming thoughtful.
It was the practical step to achieve the identity he wanted.
And the result was, well, pretty stunning. The sources say he saw major change in just 2 weeks.
Which sounds fast, but it makes sense. The problem was never his desire to be good. It was the missing strategy. Once he had the tool, he could succeed. And that success creates hope, which makes the whole process easier.
So the takeaway for a parent or a teacher is what?
You can prompt the child using their own words. When you see them starting to struggle, you don't just say, hey, stop it. You can ask, what are the words you chose to say in your heart right now? It puts the power and the strategy back in their hands.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit more. If we need this practical plan, this how, we can't just use a dictionary definition for something like patience, right?
Yeah.
How do you make an abstract idea something a kid can actually do?
This is where the sources introduce the working definition, and they say it's non-negotiable. A dictionary definition of, say, humility is totally useless because it's not actionable.
So what makes a definition a working one?
It has to meet three criteria. It has to be specific to the child, it has to be measurable, and it has to be attainable.
So it's basically customized goal setting for character. Let's get into the examples they used.
Okay, take a huge concept like kindness. For a kid named Billy who fights with his brother over toys, kindness gets broken down into measurable actions like letting my brother have the first turn.
Okay, that's something you can actually see.
Or listening to my brother's ideas without interrupting. These are things Billy can actually do. You can check the box. He either did it or he didn't.
You're not grading a feeling, you're grading an action. I like that. What about something harder, like perseverance?
Yeah, that's a tough one. For a kid who hates homework, the working definition becomes continuing on after you feel like quitting. It names the feeling, I want to quit, and then sets the boundary for success.
So you're not pretending the feeling isn't there?
Not at all. You're teaching them how to act in spite of it. Patience could be waiting with a happy heart, or even more specific, not interrupting for 10 seconds.
And the sources even did this for humility. How do you make that practical?
I loved this one. Humility wasn't about thinking less of yourself. The working definition was an action. Listening to the opinions of others, or not assuming I have all the answers and asking for advice, humility becomes something you do.
So the assignment here is for the parent and child to sit down together.
Yes, collaboratively. You figure out the challenge, say, diligence with chores, and then you brainstorm the specific how-to steps together. That shared plan is what empowers the child. They help build their own ladder out of the problem.
Which brings us to effort, because a plan is just a piece of paper until you actually do it.
Right. And we're back to the physics analogy. To defy gravity, you have to exert force.
The sources had a hands-on activity for this, right?
Yeah.
With the styrofoam cups and toothpicks.
Yeah, it's a great illustration. You poke toothpicks through the sides of a cup to create this messy obstacle course inside. And the goal is to use other toothpicks to slowly, painfully maneuver a golf ball or a rock up and over the rim.
And it's incredibly clumsy and slow.
That's the whole point. The clumsiness is the lesson. It shows that change requires a plan, the toothpicks you're holding, and sustained awkward effort. It's not smooth. Defying your default habits is slow, conscious work.
That makes so much sense. This working out of our character, as the sources put it, it's not about immediate compliance. That's just obedience.
True change is a messy process. It's like building a muscle from the heart outward. The sources are clear that it takes ongoing work for these changes to really take hold in our emotions or our finances or our relationships.
And that focus on effort is actually what creates the hope, isn't it? With the tally marks, every failure is just more guilt.
You sink deeper into the pit.
But with the how, a failure isn't a moral crisis. It's just feedback. It's a sign that maybe the strategy needs a little tweak, not that the person is broken.
Exactly. Success and failure are just data points in the process of growth.
So to pull this all together, what this deep dive shows is that real lasting change means we have to move past just saying the what. We have to define these big character ideas into small, practical, measurable steps, the how.
Right. And you now have the tools to do that, to equip yourself and the kids in your life by focusing on that how, yeah. by creating a working definition together, and by understanding that the effort is the whole point. That's what defies our natural negative defaults.
We have one last thing in the source material, a kind of reflective exercise called a parent's prayer for peace. And it pointed out that a family's emotional state often just rides the waves of the parent's emotions.
Mm-hmm. That communicating calm is one of the most important things a parent can do.
So if teaching the how is the key to helping your child change, this leaves a final provocative question for you, the listener. What is your working definition of peace? How might defining that practical how for yourself, the specific measurable steps you'll take to communicate calm when you feel triggered, how might that be the most powerful teaching tool you could ever offer your family?